building upon the long-standing relations between Maine and Canada. Maine only borders one other U.S. state, New Hampshire, but it borders two Canadian provinces, Quebec and New Brunswick, and it is connected to others by both ferry and heritage. Think Nova Scotia or Prince Edward Island. Maine and eastern Canada didn't even used to be different countries. The international boundary wasn't decided until 1842. And for generations, many families have lived their lives on both sides of the border. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we are here in the town of Fort Kent, which sits right on a bend in the St. John River. We'll be discussing Maine-Canada relations with a group of people committed to furthering our friendship and cooperation, both culturally and economically. From cross-border trade to shared services, how do we make the most out of our relationship with Canada? Maine Calling is next. But first, this news. From the University of Maine, Fort Kent campus, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Everyone here in the audience knows the importance of the economic, political, and cultural relations between Maine and Canada. Today, we're going to talk about these historic connections between the two countries and about future opportunities for closer ties. With me today, Lise Pelletier. You know, it just occurred to me, Lise, I didn't ask you how to pronounce your last name. How do you say it?
Pelletier.
Pelletier. Okay, Lise Pelletier is here. She's director of the Acadian Archives at UMaine Fort Kent. George Dumont, did I do that correctly,
yes,
is a member of the Acadia of the Lands and Forests Core Leadership Team, and we're going to ask you about that in a minute, the Acadia of the Lands and Forests. And Don Guimond, Fort Kent Town Manager. As always, we want to hear from you. How important are Maine-Canada connections to you, to your line of work? What do you want to know about the relationship here on the border? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. We should also mention this is being live streamed on Facebook if you'd like to watch. So I'm going to start with you, Lise. Can you give us some historical background? There wasn't even a border here for a long time, was there?
Mm-hmm. It is an interesting area to study, not just because it is a border area, but in terms of the population. When the first families arrived in this area, it was called Madawaska Territory, and it encompassed northwestern New Brunswick and the county of Temiscouata in Quebec.
Temiscouata.
Yes, exactly. And although there were approximately 60 Maliseet families, no white person, no white man had ever taken up a permanent residence here. It was hunting grounds. It was used as an area where traders could pick up furs, but then they went back. The area was also well known because its rivers and portages connected Halifax, Nova Scotia to Montreal, Quebec. This area was known as the Great Communication Roads. And so Acadians settled in the Madawaska Territory. Well, when they came, the river was there, and families settled on either side of the river, north and west of Grand Falls, parents, siblings, and also friends of the community. And when they came, they didn't come as we see immigrants coming to a new country or a new area today. They came in already made communities. Either they were related or they were connected through communities in which they'd already lived. And so they settled on either side of the river, and very, very soon, in a matter of years, the area had almost 3,500 people in 1840, and it was almost homogeneously a people of French descent and Catholic, so on both sides of the river.
And you're one of the families who has, you're part of a family with connections on both sides of the river.
I do, and I'm not the only one. My father was from Conyers, New Brunswick, and he married a beauty queen from Eagle Lake, Maine. His parents were from St. Francis, Maine, and my mother's parents were from Winterville, and my grandfather was from Halifax by way of Camelton. And so I grew up with family and parents on both sides of the river, which we always called going to the other side, which is an interesting phrase when you consider it historically, because it means that everybody in the area considered the totality of the Madawaska territory one whole and not the division of U.S. and Canada.
George, when I introduced you, I said you're the member of the Acadia of the Lands and Forests Core Leadership Team. And I think that's really important for today's discussion. What is the Acadia of the Lands and Forests?
Well, it's a new group, actually, that was formed after the World Acadian Congress in 2014. And if you take a pin and if you would put it in the middle of the bridge between Madawaska and Edmundston, and you drew a 60-mile circle around that pin, that would encompass the new area now known, the new territory known as Acadia of the Lands and Forests, l'Acadie des Terres et Forêts in French, as we say. So that encompasses roughly about 100,000 people in that area. It has about 50 cities, municipalities, and communities. And there's obviously two international languages, two provinces, one state, and it's really quite unique if you think about it, really. All of these center around, obviously, the Acadians that settled this area, as Lee started to talk about earlier. And interestingly enough, there's about 300 manufacturers that are housed within this particular, well, I say 300 manufacturers and businesses that are actually housed within this 60-mile, 100-kilometer, area.
Don, what are some of the ways that people in this circle are trying to work together that you haven't in the past?
Well, I think there's some historical cooperation that has occurred. We're just trying to build upon that from a municipal government perspective. Probably no different than folks in the southern part of the state, how they deal with Massachusetts or New Hampshire. We look to them as our partners. We operate a regional transfer station and recycling facility here in this part of the valley, but the landfill is located in New Brunswick. And so there's always been that type of cooperation to the mutual benefit of both sides. And I think that's the key. If it's, you need to make it beneficial to all participants, and that's what we strive to do.
What do you hope to see in the future? What, if we were going to have this conversation in 10 years, what would you like to say we're doing together?
I think we need to build upon the issues that we're currently doing, but also explore new avenues, whether it be educational opportunities with this institution and institutions in Edmundston, and as well as the business sector. I mean, we are in a primarily a forest-based economy in this entire region. And a lot of Canadian folks or companies such as Maybeck and Irving and Twin Rivers operate in this part of Maine. And we're so intertwined that that relationship is critical to our future. And we need to maintain and sustain and grow that relationship.
As we're having this conversation right now, in Washington, another conversation is going on, and that's the renegotiation of NAFTA. How much are people in this area watching that? How much will it matter for your future and what you envision?
Well, I think everybody's nervous about the NAFTA agreement being repealed. I mean, it's still to be seen if there's what's actually going to come up about from that. I know that our governor and some of his representatives are working very closely on the timber industry end of NAFTA. I don't think I'm privy to exactly what that means, but I know that they are working about that. I don't know, Don, if you know anything more.
No, it's always a concern when somebody is negotiating a treaty such as that that has a major impact on your region and you're not at the table. So that can be problematic in many ways, but we have to rely on our elected officials. And I believe folks like Senator Collins, for example, have a good pulse on how intertwined the forest products industry is in this part of Maine. And hopefully NAFTA would not dramatically interfere with that.
All right. What are some of the historically difficult issues between the two sides, Lise?
Actually, historically difficult. I would have to say that there weren't that many. In spite of the fact that the border was instituted in 1842 and theoretically divided one people into two different nations with two different languages. The flow and regularity of contacts actually helped the St. John Valley Acadians preserve cultural traditions, preserve religious, business, social activities, and each side grew from these interactions. Even until the 1990s, in an effort to be pragmatic, most of the babies born from Maine were born in Grand Falls or Edmundston, New Brunswick. And most of the babies in northern New Brunswick were born either in Eagle Lake and Fort Kent. And I don't believe there was any written protocol or the countries were just being very pragmatic and respectful and helpful to each other. Of course, one of the good consequences of that is those who, like me, were born in Fort Kent and then resided in Canada, well, we grew up with two citizenships, and that can be extremely useful. So I think there has been historically not that many problems in terms of red tape or governmental insertion into preventing people from traveling from one border to the other. But that has changed.
I was going to say, has that changed, especially, you know, since September 11th as border crossings? I mean, even physically, the border crossing has changed in the years I've been a reporter in Maine. It's a much different place. How does that affect the relationship that you're trying to build upon at the same time? Now one must have a passport and a pretty clean record to get across that border.
Yeah, and it has, in some ways, probably stopped some of the folks from coming here in the United States. Some people obviously feel intimidated. They don't like being questioned heavily or made feel like they're a criminal, you know, that's trying to get into our country and with the questions that are asked. But, when I look at it, when I cross into Clare, for example, I get the same questions. You know, where do you live? Where are you going? And what's the purpose of your business? It's the same questions that are asked here in the U.S. But somehow when they're asked in English, to somebody, say, from Quebec who doesn't speak too well in English, it doesn't come across, I think, quite the same way.
Do you see fewer vehicles crossing than you used to?
I think so. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
I believe the number count is down some. But I think it's coming around. When September 11 occurred, there was a discomfort in crossing. I think people are feeling more at ease with it today, and hopefully we'll get back to where we were, where we used to cross without even thinking about it. Hopefully in time we'll get back to that type of feeling, but it's a work in progress. I do believe that it is getting better.
I have some statistics that I've gleaned from Lisa Lavoie's thesis on the relationship between the cross-border areas of Clare, New Brunswick and Fort Kent, Maine. So if you compare the year 2000 to 2013, in 2000 we had over 300,000 vehicles enter the port of Fort Kent and 21,000 trucks, that is commercial trucks. In 2013, the number of vehicles dropped to 199 or 200,000, and the number of commercial trucks dropped to 9,617. So in terms of passenger vehicles, you're looking at a 66.5 decrease. And of course, I see that as, whoa, that's part of a big chunk of our consumers. And also a 46% decrease in the number of commercial vehicles crossing. I also see it as emblematic of a lack of communication. People are afraid, and it's not just one-sided. It's not just Canadians refusing or saying, I don't know what's going on, but I don't want to be a part of it. It's also Americans who've decided they're not going to cross into Canada anymore because they don't want to come back. They don't want to to experience crossing the border, the port. And I say that because I am very hopeful that things can change. And the only way they can change is through education. We all know that border agents on both sides, either Canada or the United States, are doing their job. The first thing is not really safety. The first thing is protecting the economy. That was certainly drilled into me by my father, who was a customs officer in Clare. So I understand that whole thing. And now, of course, we have increased measures of security and the threat or potential threat to the U.S. especially. And I think one of the ways that we can encourage people and get back the interconnections and interrelations between the two sides of the St. John River is through education, explaining, and maybe even helping people get their passports on both sides.
Yeah, and that's a big thing right there. Is a lot of people, once a passport was required to cross the borders between the U.S. and Canada, something that we never really had to worry about before, that was a big change right there. That made a big difference on whether people were going to attempt to cross. And you know, that whole education that Lee's talking about where, hey, look, passports aren't that hard to get.
Do you think it's the cost or just the idea of having to get one?
I don't think it's the cost much as it is probably the idea, you know.
I read a statistic that Maine's largest trading partner is Canada. Each day, $1.8 billion crosses the border. If that's the case with such reduced traffic, what is the potential?
Well, we have to probably remember that most of that is probably lumber going across there. Canada's our largest trading partner, without a doubt. I can't remember where the next number is here, but there's quite a big difference here between Canada and the next country as far as trading partners. So it does account for a huge thing, you know. I think really though the fact that a lot of these mills that process our lumber are located in Canada has a lot to do with that, you know, how much of that is exported over to Canada. But the fact of the matter is that we don't have those mills to process that lumber. You know, would be awful nice if we had all those same mills here in on the Maine side processing lumber that's going across.
And as part of our 4 days here in Aroostook County, tomorrow we'll be talking about the forest products industry from the University of Maine and Presque Isle. Today we're talking about the relations between Maine and Canada. We'd love to have you join the conversation. Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. That's 1-800-399-3566. Our email address, talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. And again, as I just mentioned, tomorrow and Wednesday, we will be broadcasting from UMaine Presque Isle. And on Wednesday, we'll be hosting a luncheon at noon. The public is welcome to the luncheon. You need to RSVP. Everything else, just show up. On Thursday, we'll be broadcasting from Holton High School Middle School. Visit the Maine Calling website or Facebook page for more details. When we come back, more of the discussion about the Maine-Canada relations. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do Freemasons in Maine, supporting Maine Public Radio's efforts to provide knowledge, wisdom, and entertainment to the people of Maine. Cary Medical Center, committed to delivering the highest quality health care in a compassionate and nurturing environment in Aroostook County. CaryMedicalCenter.org. And CEI, proud to support Aroostook County and all of Maine with financing, business advising, and industry expertise. Learn more at CEI.org.
Next time on The World, a behind-the-scenes look at dubbing foreign TV shows and movies in Germany. German voice actors get deep into their characters and turn American entertainment into German entertainment.
If you want to do it good, it will be a complete piece of art again afterwards.
Inside the German film dubbing industry on The World.
That's coming up this afternoon at 3 o'clock here on Maine Public Radio. Many of your favorite Maine Public Television programs, both PBS and local, are available online through our video on-demand service at mainepublic.org. Qualified supporters also have access to Passport, which allows extended access to many of the program archives, such as the ability to watch entire series or seasons, sort of like a public television Netflix service. The Vietnam War by Ken Burns is there now through the end of this year. Passport is already available to supporters of both Maine Public Television and radio at the $60 a year or $5 a month level or more. For more information, please visit mainepublic.org. Thanks.
And welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and today we are broadcasting live from the campus of University of Maine, Fort Kent. Today on the program, we are talking about the ties between Maine and Canada. Here with me, George Dumond, member of the Acadia of the Lands and Forest Core Leadership Team. Lise Peltier is director of the Acadian Archives at UMaine Fort Kent, and Don Guimond is Fort Kent Town Manager. We invite you to join the conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. On the line is with us now Kristen Musinski, who is Director of Communications for Maine's Secretary of State. Hi, Kristen. Thanks for calling into the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
And you have an event coming up you wanted us to mention, and I said, well, why don't you tell us about it yourself?
Yeah, when I heard about the show, I thought this would be a great time to mention it, because we have a pretty unique opportunity coming up with the Maine State Archives, where we're going to be hosting the Tree for Boston. For those in the know, that's the city of Halifax, Nova Scotia, sends down a Christmas tree to the city of Boston every Christmas season, to commemorate their aid during the Halifax explosion in World War I, which really devastated a great part of that city. And Mainers were actually also a big part of that relief effort, and this year we have the opportunity to recognize that and have a stop. The tree is actually going to be coming right into Capitol Park in Augusta at 10 a.m. on November 20th. We'd really like to invite everyone to join us for that, and one of our archivists who has personal ties to Nova Scotia himself has done a lot of research on this, and we'll be presenting that so we can help educate the public about that event and what Mainers did. It's a great example, again, of that deep connection to Canada that so many of us have. So,
well, Kristen, thanks so much for calling in and telling us about this. We'll put this on the Maine Calling Facebook page, yet another example of the connection between Maine and Canada as the great big Christmas tree comes through Augusta on November 20th. I'm going to go to a Facebook message. This is from Brenda. She writes, exchange rates have a lot to do with the changing consumer behavior, don't you think?
Yes, absolutely. I was talking this morning to a couple businesses, and I wanted to get a feel on what their percentages are for Canadian traffic that's coming here. And as the exchange rate is, you know, favors them, that's obviously better. You know, it's to their benefit, obviously, if their exchange rates are closer to ours. But where they're a little bit more spread out now, we see less of our Canadian traffic here, especially on these cross-border crossings that are very, very close, like Clare and Fort Kent and Madawaska and Edmondson and so forth. But about a third of their business, as much as a third of their commerce is derived from there. Martin's about 50%. Martin's in the Madawaska, about 50% of the business is Quebec and New Brunswick residents.
Wow. Don, I wanted to talk to you. You talked earlier about municipal arrangements. If there's a fire on either side of the border, can communities respond to one another?
Absolutely. We have agreements with our neighbors in Clare and St. Francois and Baker Brook. It's common practice. And the irony of that is we have to stop at customs and show your passports. But when the fire truck comes through, the customs agent stops the traffic in the middle of the road and waves people by. It's just kind of ironic, and I probably shouldn't say that because somebody's not going to be happy someplace, but that's how it occurs. You're there to assist each other and help each other. So we'll go to their side of the border. They'll come to our assistance whenever it's needed.
All right. The last time I talked with two of you on this Maine Calling program was 3 years ago, which I can't believe, and it's when there was the big Acadian Congress. What has changed in those 3 years? A lot of goodwill then, a lot of big plans. Has anything tangible changed?
Yeah, well, we've, as we said earlier, we've established a core leadership team. Initially comprised of about 100 people. We're more than 100 people now. There are from all walks of life, business people, people in the cultural event area, and just the Common Joe is part of this 100 people or 100 plus people group. And, you know, the biggest thing is we've tried to recognize about six areas that we really need to work on. I mean, there's the obvious economic development and entrepreneurship part that we need to work on even more. But there's other areas, like, for example, the human capital and cross-border workforce mobility. That's where universities are starting to work with each other to see what programs they have and how can they augment that with either a French immersion or an English immersion, or maybe, for example, the Community College in Edmonton has an off-road trucking program where the community college in Presque Isle has an on-road truck driving program. So they are starting to talk to each other to see, well, how can we work together in these kinds of things. I mean, there are many other things, cross-border life exchange, the tourism and cultural and the quality of life piece, obviously, we've started working with. And people now have an identity. They're Acadians. We're all Acadians in this 60-mile radius. And as a result from it, you know, they feel that they now have an identity, and working together just makes sense. Of course, we still have all of the things to worry about. You know, the border still exists, but we're trying to see how can we work more together. How, you know, identifying all these businesses that are within this area, and how can we, say, complement one business with another business, even though it's not in this country, or it might just be New Brunswick working more with Quebec. There's as much to work with there as there is between the U.S. and Canada, believe it or not.
I think one of the greatest accomplishments was the connections that were made back in 2014. Those connections will last forever. They just didn't expire once the Congress got done. And sometimes we try to measure things in what big event occurred or what big accomplishment happened, but sometimes it's the little things. For example, we have two members of from Edmonton that are members of the UMFK Board of Visitors. If not for the Congress, those types of things may not have happened. There's a lady that processes cheese in Temiscuata. I can now buy the cheese here in Fort Kent. Prior to the Congress, you couldn't do that. So there's a lot of little examples of things that occurred because of the Congress that, you know, we can't take for granted. We need that to move forward.
Lee, for you, the cultural connections are the most important, aren't they?
Yes. In terms of the effects of the CMA in this area.
The CMA?
Congrès Mondial Acadien.
The World Acadian Congress.
What I've seen on an individual level is a heightened awareness of the identity of the French Acadian identity in individuals and in communities. And I want to mention Fort Kent because I'm very proud that we have both the American and Acadian flags or banners flying in town. And one doesn't take away anything from the other. We're both. We're Acadian and we are American and proud of being both. That was not as evident before. And so that connection, that sense of belonging extends to the other side of the border, to Quebec and New Brunswick, because our ancestors are connected, but we are also connected throughout the 20th century. Most of the people, when we started working on the Acadian Congress, well, okay, you're from Dijli and you're from Grand Falls, and well, all of a sudden we had family, and we knew the families of one or the other, or they'd worked in the Allagash Woods, or they'd picked potatoes, or we had picked. The elements that include culture or provide or sustain culture are there. And it's through these repeated connections and contacts with these elements of culture, such as religion, traditional arts, the French language, that we sustain and celebrate and conserve that which is essentially our identity and our culture.
We have a tweet from the Presque Isle Library. The library offers a friendly, supportive environment to facilitate your passport application in response to border crossing requirements. And then we have an email from Kelly. Wanted to say we stopped going to New Brunswick, PEI, Nova Scotia, etc. because of the passport requirements and expenses. The authoritarian fear factor mentioned I don't think is applicable just yet, at least for myself and my wife. However, the hassle factor, like the hassle we endure for air travel, certainly is another valid consideration as to why we've stopped flying into the U.S. and in general and driving into Canada. How do you guys get things going when there's that feeling?
I think you talked about it earlier. Was the education on, you know, maybe the process itself and where people can help you with this process. This hassle is real. For a lot of people, it's real. And it's real not just for U.S. citizens trying to cross into Canada. It's real for the Canadians trying to do the same thing on this side.
I'm going to go to Robert, who's calling from Charlotte County, New Brunswick. Hi, Robert. Thanks for calling.
Hi. I just wanted to point out often and easily overlooked little problem here. One of the casualties of the increased border scrutiny has been the many musical acts who share members across the border. I'm sure it's that way up in the Madawaska region as well. But it's all but impossible to get groups to get together and play at different functions across the river unless you're doing it for free or anything like that. But anyway, that was one point. The other one I wanted to point out was that down here, Maine and New Brunswick, as you know, are engaged in what's we're calling the Three Nation Vacation, but it's officially it's Two Nation Vacation, but in recognition of First Nations, we want to start calling that the Three Nation Vacation. And so we down here want to, I want to point out that we're trying to make an actual physical connection via the East Coast Greenway and the Great Trail here in Canada. And we're trying to make a physical connection across the border to continue that concept of the Bold Coast Bikeway and the East Coast Greenway to physically connect our two provinces, in the state of Maine.
Well, Robert, thanks so much for calling. As you were talking about the difficulty for musicians and musical groups, all three of the guests were nodding. But you also brought up another topic that I think they really wanted to talk about was tourism and the two-nation or three-nation vacation. What is that? George, you want to start? What's going on there?
Well, I think Lee's probably more familiar with the two-nation vacation thing. Maybe she'd want to address that more than I would probably.
The Two Nation Vacation is kind of a collaboration between Maine and New Brunswick, and we're hoping to expand on that. It's also a collaboration that exists in the arts. It's been confined to southern Maine and, let's say, schools of art where internships are collaborated upon and artists can go to one school or the other, etc. We're looking to expand that to include the northern section of Maine and to allow artists to come and go freely. Now, this already exists. As long as you're not being paid, there is paperwork. You need to be informed about how that can happen. At the Acadian Archives, for example, we have exhibits, we have artists who come, speakers who come. If they're from Canada, they cannot be paid. It has to be an exchange where no money. Otherwise, it would be considered as a threat to a possible position or job on the American side, let's say. But you have to follow the rules, okay? So, we go to the border. I confirm that people are not being paid, et cetera, and it is possible.
Yep. How long has this been the case, though, for a band where, you want your cousin, the drummer, who lives in New Brunswick, to come join you to pay for a gig, a wedding or something, and you can't. How long has that been the case?
I don't know how long, but I know during the World Acadian Congress we had some major issues with that. I mean, and it's an arduous process. It's a big process. The paperwork has to go to some place in New Hampshire, and they need a certain number of days for that to be processed. It's not something you can do in a week.
I think it's over 90 days. It is because it goes through different hands. So you have to plan in advance. You know, it is doable. It's just more cumbersome. And the internships that I was talking about, those are possible as well. However, both governments, either in Canada or the United States, require documentation and verification of the person and the position, et cetera, et cetera. And you have to comply. And so you have to be educated well in advance.
Thank you, Robert, for your very good comment and question. We are going to take another short break. A word about tomorrow's program. We are going to be broadcasting, as we mentioned, from the campus of UMaine Presque Isle. Our topic will be forestry. So we'd love you to share your thoughts ahead of time by emailing talk@mainepublic.org, tweeting us, or posting on our Facebook page. And again, if you are in the area, come by and watch the program. You're listening to Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do Ocean View at Falmouth, Maine owned and managed for 31 years and committed to offering active retirement living with peace of mind for the future. The Midcoast Symphony Orchestra, performing in Lewiston and Topsom this Saturday evening and Sunday afternoon, with program and ticket information at midcoastsymphony.org. And MMG Insurance in Presque Isle, protecting your peace of the world, proud to support Maine Calling live from the county. MMGINS.com.
Back in the early 1980s, Democratic Congressman Mike Sinar of Oklahoma had the support of the NRA until he started advocating stricter gun laws.
They not only punish the people that do not follow them down the line, they dehumanize them.
I'm Robert Siegel. How the NRA became a political force to be reckoned with and one lawmaker who paid the price. This afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Join us for All Things Considered from 4 to 6:30 this evening here on Maine Public Radio. And coming up in just a few minutes at 2 o'clock, we'll have Commonwealth Club of California. Today's guest is journalist Nick Bilton. He'll have the story of Ross Ulbricht, the notorious founder of the Silk Road website. That's journalist Nick Bilton on Commonwealth Club of California, coming up at 2 o'clock right here on Maine Public Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling, and we are broadcasting from the campus of the University of Maine, Fort Kent. We are on the border. Today on the program, Canada-Maine Relations. Joining me today, Don Guimond, the Fort Kent Town Manager, George Dumond, member of the Acadia of the Lands and Forests Core Leadership Team, and a retired financial advisor, and Lise Peltier, director of the Acadian Archives at UMaine Fort Kent. Join our conversation, 1-800-399-3566. Also hoping members of the audience here will ask a question. We have one. Tell us your first name and where you're from.
My name is Charles Tardif. I'm from a family that owns the company called Maybeck. That's more common than a question. It is what's interesting. That's a vibrant example of the relationship between the two countries. Now, Maybeck is coming. The name of the company comes from the contraction of two words, Maine, Quebec. Now, where due to the demographic and the presence of the channel, communication channel in Quebec, the one, the St. Lawrence River, particularly, there was settlements right on the border, where on the U.S. side, on the Maine side, that was the virgin forest that was there for over 80 miles of forest, so no community around. So with the time, there'd been an open relationship between the Maine landowners and the Quebec communities, where the entrepreneurship developed between themselves and decided to start to develop mills all along the border, mostly lumber mills, and so that we could exchange through the border, and create wealth on both sides, creating jobs, in the Maine community, logging, trucking, and any service around, and on the Quebec side, we're giving work, for in the mill business. So today, there's been exchanges that we're talking about evaluation just for the section of the main Quebec border between Escor and Cobengore. There are over 1,000 jobs now in Maine related to those logging, trucking, and communities around, and in Quebec side, probably 2,000 or 3,000 jobs related to this surrounding of exchange, which is really important. No, so that's and to keep the border open is quite important on both sides, because that's really a two-way trade. Just as example, my company acquired a mill in Masardis, Maine, 3 years ago, what used to be the Fraser Mill. And the chips produced, wood chips produced from the logs, are going to Edmonton, Canada, to be transformed, create a pulp that is crossing again the border in Madawaska, where they produce paper. So all that is tied together. And I think that's to the strength of this area. And I think that's my main probably concern actually is being into that lumber business. Especially, we've been in the middle of a dispute again. I could see, sadly, the traditional lumber dispute between Canada and U.S. That is mainly probably concerning more what's going on in Western Canada and Western U.S. than what's going on here along the border. But we're mostly the border here, most of the wood supply from the mills in Quebec side come from U.S.
Right,
and we're still charged with taxes that we would like to be exempted. So we're working hard toward that. I need support. The politician of Maine has been really supportive, from the governor to the senators and representative has been in Washington, has been quite supportive, and we do hope that that support will prevail to the exemption that we used to have in the past that then we don't have already.
Thank you so much for stepping up to the mic. Don, anything to say?
Well, I mean, as he's mentioned, the forest products industry has been historically intertwined. It's not two separate industries. It's really one that serves the entire region one way or the other. And I think he made another point about how the name Maybeck came from. We have a lot of that happens. For example, the Can-Am sled dog race, Canadian-American sled dog races that are held here in Fort Kent every year. Many of the mushers come from Canada, and the whole region works together to make that happen and uses the North Maine woods as their trail system. Another example is the International Muskie Fishing Derby, where you can sign up in Clare if you're a Canadian citizen and participate in the derby as Americans would participate on this side and do your fishing on international waters. So that intermingling is there, and it's a big part of who we are, and it's something that we need to continue to preserve.
We have Joey on Facebook who writes, "The Acadia of the Lands and Forests has been doing a great job working to build an international relationship to help our economies. The two things I'm most interested in is the international snowmobile event you just mentioned and international access to the Canadian and American railways. Last year, there wasn't much advertising in regards to the international snowmobile event. Has there been a consideration to do more advertising this year? Also, can you provide an update on the research that has been done regarding improving access to the rail system?" That's Joey.
Well, I can address the International Snowmobile Festival. That was brought back after being idled for several years. And when we brought it back, it wasn't just an event between Maine and New Brunswick. We included Quebec in it. And instead of having a regular route, we had it open to the entire region of Acadia of the Lands and Forests. And it was our first year. Obviously, it was a learning experience to try to incorporate a new province in the festival. But I think this year they're going to be putting it out on a contracted basis to have somebody take the lead on this and is going to do the advertising and everything else. And I think you're probably going to see this year probably be a little bit better advertised. Maybe stay tuned. I think you're going to see something going on that. As far as rail, that's interesting. We had the Corps leadership team has funded a study here for a reload station in the region. A lot of the Canadian railroad has been, you see a lot of these container cars going through here, and they're going to Moncton or they're going to Nova Scotia or whatever, and they're coming back, a lot of these are coming back empty. So we commissioned a study to study that particular part of Would a reload station in this area be viable? And the study not only said it could be, it was overwhelming. And usually companies like CN are very quiet about these things. They jumped on it right away. And I believe the New Brunswick government right now is funding a further study to be able to see to actually make it happen. And I would think probably something like that would probably happen somewhere. It's not been decided, but probably somewhere in the Edmonton area, because it's the best location, centralized location for the region. And that could be helpful for all regions, Quebec, New Brunswick, and Maine as well.
So right now there are the facilities to offload American products, but not facilities to load Canadian products.
That's right. Reload our products so that it can go back towards Montreal in that direction there. So that's a great economic boost for this area, if that would happen. Right now, it's a go unless they say no. So we're still optimistic that this project in the next few years will develop into something great.
We have an email from Mary. Wes Arts is working with the University of Maine's Franco-American Department on a translation project to work with businesses and organizations along the Old Canada Road, Route 201 corridor, to welcome and encourage French-speaking visitors into Maine. It's an exciting collaboration with UMO, and we hope that the Maine Department of Tourism joins this project.
Oh, interesting.
And let's see here. We have an email from Gregory. Why is there such a lack of promotion in the northeast of Canadian tourism?
Not sure about that question, but if I can piggyback on
sure.
the comment that came before, as an offshoot of the Canadian CMA that occurred in 14, in conjunction with MDOT, we created a cultural byway in the St. John Valley that has interpretive signages from Allagash all the way to Sierra Plantation, and is bilingual signage that speaks about the different things that are the history of the regions. And, you know, whether it be education, whether it be religion, whether it be forest products, etc. So similar to, in some ways, to what they're hoping to do there. We've done this a couple years ago now, and it's quite interesting to do the circuit and to learn about this region in whatever language, in French or English, whichever you prefer.
We'll go to Jack, who's calling from Gorham. Hi, Jack. Go ahead.
Hi, Jennifer. I'm listening to the program, found it very interesting, and you know, a lot of talk about the encouraging cross traffic and tourism. I just came back from Quebec City with a group of friends this weekend, and unfortunately, I found that crossing in Quebec, they were very intimidating, very challenging. I'm an older gentleman, they were really quite rude, and you know, it didn't seem to be as though they were going out of their way to welcome us at all. I know it's a tough time with the whole issue of, you know, ISIS and everything else, but this didn't seem to be appropriate. And coming back on the American side, just it was very, very pleasant, very easy. A few questions, checked us out and sent us through. But the Quebec people were not pleasant at all.
I think it's a matter of certain ports. You know, if you were crossing a certain port, you probably would get the same thing. Maybe at every port that you would cross. I don't know. I don't know if you would agree, guys, on that. But
I'd have to ask where exactly this negative experience happened.
Where in Quebec?
Well, I crossed into through Jackman, after Jackman, going into Quebec.
I haven't found that at all. And I've traveled that corridor quite a bit between Augusta and Sherbrooke. Even in Quebec, you know, after the referendum, for people who follow the politics in Quebec, businesses and English-speaking people as tourists coming to Quebec are essential to the economy. And if anything, I have seen a dramatic opening up and acceptance of English everywhere in businesses in Quebec, although the official language of Quebec is French, and all publicity is supposed to be only in French. Businesses have come around.
They have come around.
And
but I feel I could had the same experience. I crossed in Derby, Vermont, just a week ago. And I did two crossings, and the first day's crossing into Quebec wasn't as pleasant as the second day's crossing. So I think it's probably individuals more than it is probably locations, you know.
Jack, thanks for calling in today. We'll go to Steve, who made a post on Facebook. He wrote, my grandfather was born in Clare, New Brunswick, 1885. Moved to Island Falls, married my grandmother, 1913. They resided in Island Falls for their entire married life, raised 9 kids, 6 girls and 3 boys. He was a logging operator most of his life and employed men from both countries with very little restrictions of any kind through the early 1900s through the 40s. My oldest daughter went to college in Halifax. Then, in the 70s and early 80s, Brewer, Maine had a Can USA Games with Moncton kids that created much cross-border tourism. Alternatively, we clean the torch from Brewer or Moncton every year, which I was lucky enough to do, should start this again. So this Steve wants to, first of all, his story sounds a lot like your family's, Lisa's, but also would like to restart the Can USA Games. Is there some talk about that?
I don't know about that. I know that there's talk about doing a lot more cross-border athletic events between schools. I know we were talking about that in the core leadership team.
Mm-hmm. There's a great hockey league in New Brunswick, and a lot of our boys, young boys from Fort Kent and all along the border are participating in. Boy, are they learning French. and they're playing really great hockey. So that's an opportunity. And I think it's a great way to learn the French language and to preserve. I think the French language, in terms of Maine attracting people, you gave the example of Martin's, 50% consumerism at Martin's in Madawaska is from Canada. Those are French people from Quebec and New Brunswick going to Martin's. And everywhere you go at Martin's, people speak French. And they even have cards or buttons that say, Je parle français. And the program that we talked about, Kate Harrington, a former professor of French here at UMFK, has and Plymouth, New Hampshire, has this bilingual program going for both sides of the border. That is, they're increasing French language acquisition in for businesses on the main side and English acquisition for people on the Canadian side. So,
well, that's going to have to be our last word today. How much fun was this? Lise Pelletier, director of the Acadian Archives at UMaine Fort Kent. George Dumond is here, a member of the Acadia of the Lands and Forests Core Leadership Team, and Don Guimond, Fort Kent Town Manager. Thank you to the University of Maine, Fort Kent, for your hospitality. Nikki Shields ran the board today. Our great engineers, John Bradford, Nick Godfrey, John Keimel, all helped make this happen. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. We'll be in Presque Isle Tuesday and Wednesday. We'll be in Holton on Thursday. Please come join us. Watch the program live. If you're going to be in Presque Isle on Wednesday, you can come for lunch. Look on our Facebook page for more information. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.
Special thanks to our Maine Calling On the Road Acoustic sponsors, CEI, Cary Medical Center, and MMG Insurance.